Hi, Richard.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, excellent. Good. I think the phone system's working, so I'll just quickly do the disclaimers. As usual, these audio casts are just purely for entertainment and information. We're not making any sort of recommendations of shares, nor are we giving financial advice. This week, I'm delighted to have Richard Crowe with us, who is a renowned investor, successful investor. Richard's built up an internet following on bulletin boards where he posts as Cockney Rebel. And I'm delighted to speak to you, Richard, for the first time, even though we've discussed stocks online for many years. So welcome.
Welcome. Nice to speak to you, Paul.
Brilliant. So could we, as usual, if we start by discussing your investing style. So tell us a bit about that.
Well, I use several methods, really. I invest long term, I invest the medium term, and I do a bit of trading as well. So rather than be a one-trick pony, I try to have more than one. And it depends on the stock. If I find something that looks good, looks like it's got a good long-term life to it and it's going to be exciting, then I'll buy that for a longer term. But if I see a trading opportunity now and again, then obviously I like to take those as well, and that would usually be probably a momentum trade if I think a stock's looking quite cheap and it's got news about to be released or they've got results coming up and they're looking undervalued. Then I might buy those before the results, and then shortly afterwards I might take my profit quickly and find something else to trade with. That just sort of keeps me sort of excited during the day while the rest of my stocks are there ticking along. And,
that's interesting you say that, because more recently I've been adopting very much the same approach, and a lot of people think you can only be a sort of long-term buy and hold investor, or you can be a trader, but actually you can be both, can't you, as you've just described?
Yeah, I think it works quite well. It's often, you know, I might not have that much free cash to invest in something longer term, but I keep a little bit of a float for spread betting or doing small trades via an online internet provider. And often you see stocks where there's been, you know, they've had a good bit of news, they've hinted before that their trading's going to be ahead of expectations, and the market's not taking that into account as the results approach. Or I might see a chart that seems to be moving sort of unexpectedly and think that there's a opportunity there, or there's some news coming, and it's good to, you know, just make a quick turn on something just as an extra boost to what you're actually doing during the day. So, yeah, it works well.
Yeah, okay. What sort of percentage gains do you look for then on the shorter-term trading situations?
Oh, I'm sort of happy to scalp 5 or 10% a lot of the time. It'll be quick in and out and you know, move on to something else quite quick. Occasionally on the spread betting one, if I do get into a point where I've gone in for a trade and it turns out to be a longer-term investment, that's sort of reverse of what a lot of people would do. You go for a long-term investment, find out you've picked something duff, and then decide it's you're going to get out and take a loss or something like that. Sometimes when I'm trading, I may have bought something and then found out that actually this looks quite good if I look a little bit more deeply into it. So then I might let a spread bet run or a trade run into an investment sometimes. So it's waking up to other stocks.
Yeah, okay. No, I do that sometimes as well. You know, I find, for me, researching a share is an ongoing process. You know, I do as much as I can to begin with, but it's surprising how sometimes you can miss something quite obvious, and over time you either become more or less confident about the company, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah, I think the longer you own a stock, you do pick up all those little bits and pieces within the company. You think, oh, I didn't realise they had that, or this is a feature that could be quite good. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, and I think these days, are you more towards mid and large caps rather than small caps? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that is. I started investing back in the mid-80s. The first share I bought was Black's Leisure at 4p. And someone introduced me to penny shares when I was in my 20s, and I looked at these and I thought, oh, this is good, I'll have a go, and bought Black's Leisure at 4p, sold them a couple of weeks later at 6p, and thought, this is easy, you know, sort of, I'll do it again. And I keep making 50% in a fortnight, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time the year is up.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then I bought Weird Group, which was about 20p, and the following, about a month later, it was 28p, and I sold that, and I thought, yeah, I'm really onto something here, and then
yeah.
I think I put a whole lot into another share, the next one, and then woke up one morning and read the Financial Times, and it said suspended. Didn't have a clue what suspended meant, and suddenly realised that I'd lost all my money, basically. I was sat there waiting for it to come out of suspension, and so that was a lesson, but luckily I was only punting with a little small amount, but that sort of got me interested in shares, and then I did quite well during the tech boom, and a lot of, like everybody did, I suppose, there was quite a few tech stocks where there was money to be made, and you know, you're basically an idiot to make money in that market, and when the tech boom came to an end, I sort of decided that I should sort of spend a lot more time studying shares and understand them properly, because when I first started, PE was something you did in the gym at school, it wasn't anything to do with share price, and went into studying studying stocks more, and why stocks actually went up and down. And I suppose when you're using a small amount of money, small caps are very good, because you buy small amounts of a small cap share, you can get in and out quite swiftly if something goes wrong. But it's not so good when you start making more money. And also, AIM has become such an awful place. It's become a cesspit of companies that just, since our directors taking money out of the companies and fleecing investors left, right and centre. So a place that used to be such a great place for making money in the past isn't anymore, I don't think, with all these foreign companies investing on there that have got no intention other than fleecing investors, really. So I've noticed that AIM over the last 2 years, the trend has been down on the chart, and there's been easier money to be made in fully listed small caps and mid caps. So that's where I tend to try and target my investment at the
moment. No, I think that's certainly been very wise over the last 2 years. Although, don't you think now, though, that with the fully listed smaller caps and mid-cap stocks, they all seem to be priced to perfection now? I mean, a PE of 20 seems to be the norm for those types of stocks. So where do you see them going from here, given that those valuations are now quite high?
Well, I agree that a lot of them have got quite high valuations, but I think a lot of them have got underestimated growth in them as well. And for instance, one that I quite like at the moment is Howdens, and that's got, you know, people are saying to me, oh, it's on a PE of about 15 or 16, forward PE of 15 or 16.
Yeah.
They're doubling their earnings in 3 years. This coming year, they'll double their earnings in 3 years. So you're looking at a peg of 0.5 or less there, really.
This is ticker HWDN.
HWDN, uh-huh. Yeah. And
2.7 billion market caps. That's way out of my normal sphere.
No, it's not as much as that, is it? Not,
2.7 billion, according to...
Oh, 2.7, I thought you said 7 billion. No, that's... They're growing their earnings at 100% over 3 years, and they've got the net cash of 180 million.
Mm.
I think we're on a PE of 15, if they're going to grow at that sort of pace, there's still a lot in them.
Yeah, this was spun out of MFI, wasn't it?
That's right, Galliform. It was they got rid of the old furniture part, and it just became the kitchen part. It was the kitchen part that was left, yeah. And,
I remember David Sredder raving about Howdens years ago and saying what a great business it was. And I think the shares were sort of a pound or less when he liked them, so he's been proven right. Have you looked at James Latham? That's a smaller caps.
I was holding that. I think that's quite a nice little stock, actually. That looks a really interesting little small cap, and I was holding them for a little while, but the problem is you buy they trade in 1,000 shares, and someone buys 1,000, it goes down 5p, and someone sells 1,000, it goes up 5p.
That's right. And there was a weird spike down in it last week. It dropped about a quid suddenly for no apparent reason. Intraday, and then came all the way back up again. I wasn't quick enough in buying any, unfortunately. You always worry, don't you? If you see a share you like drop 10 or 15% intraday, you think, well, how do you deal with that yourself? Do you think, well, keep away because something's going wrong, or do you dive in and grab a few more?
Depends how confident I am in the stock that I've bought, really. Sometimes you sit there and, like you say, like something like Latham's, I don't know it that well. I've held it a couple of times, and it's been a good little stock, but I don't know it that well. So if I saw a drop like that, I probably feel confident enough in a stock like that to keep hold of it, and I wouldn't try selling at all. But maybe try and buy some more on the dip, because it seems a nice, solid little company. But if you're punting around in sort of stocks that you don't know, then you can't have that confidence and the temptation to get out and make sure that you're not caught on a profit warning or something like that. So,
let's touch on profit warnings. How do you generally? I mean, it's inevitable for all investors, isn't it, that from time to time we get a profit warning? What's your typical way of approaching them? Do you sell immediately and ask questions later, or how do you deal with it?
They probably. It depends on the stock out. You know, like I say, if I know the stock well and I think it is a genuine sort of problem that they've just had short term, then I'll probably hold and then I'll buy some more. If it's a stock where I'm not totally confident, or I don't believe what the company's actually said, or they're glossing over something, then I might sell out and wait for the stock to settle and then come back in again. But I'm never one of these to sit there and fall in love with a stock and hold it, you know, through thick or thin. I think it's better to sometimes sort of jump out and then come back, even if it costs you a bit of money, just to play safe.
No, you are right. I mean, one of my bigger mistakes of many is tending to fall in love with stocks. I think particularly if you've made a lot of money on a particular stock, you can often end up falling in love with it and not sell it when you should sell it, can't you?
That's definitely an easy mistake to make.
No, I agree. Let's touch a bit on TA, technical analysis, the charts, because you do, none of my previous interviewees really have used TA. So do you want to outline how you use the charts to improve your returns?
Yeah, well, I've never been one for, like, Bollinger Bands or Fibonacci retraces and things like that. I tend to follow a chart with a trend, and I've noticed it more and more recently, since about probably 2009, when we had the bottom then. I've noticed in the previous lows in 2003, there are a lot of charts made sort of like a bowl shape to the bottom of their when they were bottoming out. And one in particular back in 2009 was Rightmove. And having seen a lot of these charts sort of like do this sort of like curved bottom, I wonder whether it's something to do with the way we now trade stocks by our computers, and whether computer programs are actually set targets at which to buy and which to sell at and which to buy back at, and whether that actually affects shares in any way that causes this sort of like general curve in a chart when it bottoms out, or sometimes when it tops out as well, you see the chart just curving over rather than making a spike down. So when I've seen sort of like charts that sort of roll over at the top or curve up at the bottom, it's often been the fact that they tend to continue to carry on that trend. Even on bad news, sometimes I've seen stocks that have, you know, they've got a chart that's making this nice curved chart, and they'll come out and they'll say, you know, things are still tough, you know, we're struggling still, but the chart continues that trend as if the market's just ignored it. And on stocks like that, I've often found it's good to follow the chart rather than listen to what the company's saying, because a few months later on down the line, they come out and say, oh, actually, things are picking up. And that chart has actually sort of highlighted that before the news is actually out. So it's like the market's in a homogenisation of people's thoughts and what they actually know, and that's definitely more than what the company's actually telling you.
That's very interesting, because the chart is essentially a measure of aggregate market sentiment, isn't it?
So while I wouldn't say that I follow the, you know, all the high technical analysis, trends in a chart often tell me a lot as to where to buy if a chart's made. A good classic one at the moment would be Foxtons. I don't know if you can see the chart on that at all.
I have, because there are a lot of shorts on that who are now getting their arses kicked, aren't they?
Exactly, and that has fallen from £4 down to £1, down to £1.50-ish. And I'll just pull the chart, and sort of like it, I noticed in November, it sort of like suddenly ground to halt, and it was moving along horizontal, even though the news was bad. And at that point, I was thinking to myself, is all the bad news in the price now? So many shorters have been on this stock, and they've driven the price down so much that maybe all the bad news is in. And the chart continues going along horizontally, and they've got a trading statement recently, and I think I bought about £1.54 and £1.60.
Yeah.
And it felt that all the bad news was in there. And, of course, they come out with their trading statement on a couple of weeks ago and said that all things are bad still, you know, but the market just didn't go down at that point. It just said, yep, we know that. Okay, we're going up.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, what sort of time frame then do you look for the chart to form a base?
It can be any time frame, as long as it's I don't like a spike as a base. If a stock goes down, it makes a spike and spikes back up. It's often going to come back down to where that, I find it's often going to come back down to where that spike was. So I much prefer a sort of like smoothed out bottoming of a chart rather than, or a curve, rather than a spike down and think it's going to go back up again, because often it's met with another big spike down. So Countrywide's another one. It's done exactly the same as Foxton's. It's come down, it's gone bobbled along the bottom, and it's gone moved up, and that looks like a good base. The market said, yep, you've gone far enough with this. And
I think that sounds very sensible, Richard. I'm very receptive to this idea, actually. I mean, looking at the Foxton's chart now, it sort of bobbled around a bit. It was declining all through 2014, did a sudden lurch in November 2014, but then started basing, and it looks as if it sort of really formed a bottom for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Or slightly more, didn't it? So, like you say, that was the market giving you a pretty clear signal that the bad news was in the bars, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And you find the same, again, you find the same with Countrywide. That's done exactly the same. And with a lot of shorters in there as well, it's often stocks where there's a lot of shorters. If you go on these bulletin boards are great, everything's great, because you see all these guys that are shorting away and saying, you know, this stock's going down to this and this stock's going down to that. And when everybody's doing that, the price has often gone far too far, and it's a crowded trade, and everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And the only thing left for anyone to do then is either close their short or go long. So
So the shorts become forced buyers and actually take the share higher, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's
possibly been the case. I think with Ocado, ASOS, AO World. I think those were crowded short trades that
I traded Ocado quite a lot. And again, I trade it on the chart while it's going north. If the chart's going north, I just trade it and go north with it. If it's going sideways or it's falling, I don't do many shorts. I usually keep all my shorts to put 2-350 stocks. But this is a bit more liquid. I don't like being locked into shorts on illiquid little small caps and stuff like that.
No, me neither. I don't short small things for money. Okay, shall we touch on some individual stocks that are your current favourites? So maybe if you want to cover two or three of your favourite stocks, and I'll sort of chip in with comments as we go along. So over to you.
Yeah, well, let's say one of my favourites at the moment is Carpetright. That's quite a nice one.
Carpetright. That's ticker CPR.
CPR.
Yeah, that's just loading up on my screen. 326 million market cap. £4.81, and you're long rather than short on this one, are you?
I'm long on that. Yeah, I watched this for quite a while, and sort of like everybody hates Carpetright. I hate Carpetright. Nobody likes Carpetright. It's not the shop I would go to buy my carpets. I've always watched it. It's always seemed to trade on such an high valuation, and I sit there and I think, oh no, Carpetright. But back in I think it was probably back in August, September time, Lord Harris sold half his stake.
Yeah.
And the market just took the shares down from about £5 to £3. And I think to myself, well, Lord Harris is selling now. He's probably given up the ghost as well. If he's given up the ghost, the stock's had it. And I think the market probably felt the same as well. But I looked at it a bit closer, and actually for the last 7 years, they've paid down all their $100 million debt, and they're now net cash.
And see, that's good,
To do that through a recession is pretty good. If so it looked like they were making money in spite of being bad rather than actually being. And so a company that can do that must have something to it. And the shorters had obviously piled in when Lord Harris had sold his stake, or his half of his stake, and they've driven the share price down from a £5 to £3. And it made that bottom in a chart. It's made like a bottom in a chart, like I said, for quite a while.
I can see that. It's a similar period to Foxton's, actually. It was basing out, wasn't it? Two, three months.
And so once it did that, I was sort of thinking, well, there's a bottom coming in here by the look of things, and there's probably some value. And then they came out with a trading statement in November and said that actually things will be, the results will be top end of market forecasts. And to say that at your interim point, you've got to be pretty confident for the next 6 months to me.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So I thought that's confidence for you, and I looked into it a bit more, and I knew they've got a new boss there. He's Wolf Wolf. He was formerly from HMV. He's been around a bit, but he's never been a CEO. So there's that sort of untested value with him, but they seem to be doing what they said they've done. So I've looked into them more. They seem to be their bed sales are up 30%. Their sales are now growing. Their margins are improving, and I think they're pretty underestimated there. And I don't think the stock would have actually got down to this level had shorters not shorted at £5 when Lord Harris sold his stock. So it looked to me as if the share got oversold through shorters piling in on Lord Harris's sale. And probably if he hadn't done that, these shares would have been trading at £5 now anyway without the...
Yes. Although, surely it is quite a bearish signal when a founder dumps a big chunk of their part of their stake, isn't it? I mean,
it is. But he's retiring. He's been wanting to retire for a long while. He's been trying to put in process his takeover plans from when he's gone. And his son was going to take over running the business, but the son decided that he wants to do something else. And apparently he was totally... disheartened with it all, and they've got a new guy in to take over, and this guy didn't want to carry on as being CEO, so they brought this Wolf Walsh in, and he seems to be doing, out in Europe, their sales are recovering nicely and all the way through the business. And it's one of these stocks, I saw Jeffries, brokers were saying, oh, short it, it was down here low, and they were saying, oh, this is a short, time to short it. They've got 700 million lease commitments going over in future years. So, and they were using that as a basis for a reason to short. But for me, that's a basis to buy, because a lot of these companies now are actually sort of reducing their rents by, getting rid of leases and getting smaller stores or renegotiating leases.
That's true.
Yeah. Carpet right up down. If they've got 700 million of leases and they've been getting their average lease down by 10%, that's 70 million quid they're going to save over the course of time there for me. So, there's some big savings to come at Carpet Right, and I think that could be a really exciting one for the next sort of year or two.
That's interesting, because I mean, looking at the forward PE here on Stockopedia, it's on 32 times forward earnings. So I suppose your thesis is that the earnings forecast will probably be wrong, that they'll be far too conservative. Is that right?
Exactly. You can't buy a stock like this based on a PE. You've got to buy a stock like this based on the fact that there's a recovery, and the PE will.
Yeah.
Rapidly growing to the recovery, and brokers have already started upgrading their earnings. And Peel Hunt last week said, although they haven't upgraded the earnings on this recent trading statement, there's scope for upgrades coming forward. And I think that when they were down at £3, the broker forecast now for the coming year is 16p. I think that'll probably get up. I can see that probably becoming 18 or 20p. Well, if you bought that down, if you bought Carpet Right down at £3 when it was a couple of months ago.
You bought it on a PE of 15.
Yeah, so that would have been a nice buy there if you'd known that was what the PE was, and I think that's what's going to happen with Carpet Right. It's going to be one of those that always trades on a decent rating, because the scope for growth in the PE is pretty good. But
yeah, and also the operating margin is very wafer thin, isn't it? So if they do get a decent recovery coming through with operational gearing, it's not fanciful to see that profits might double, triple, quadruple from where they are now on relatively small top-line growth.
Yeah, and they're upgrading stores. They're having the logo redesigned. And, the company obviously knows, the guy there knows what's wrong. He's actually spelled it out that everyone looks at Carpet Right and says, we won't even bother going in there to get a price because they don't like the story. So at least we've got to start getting people to come in and have a look and decide that they don't want to buy a carpet from us. But now they're not even coming to look at the moment. So it's one of those stocks where, and the bulletin board's dead. That's a great sign. When nobody's talking on the bulletin boards about a stock, then everybody's just sort of discounted it and said, no, that's no good. So I like stocks where there's nobody talking about them.
Yes, I do too, actually. Yeah. That's very interesting, Richard, because nobody's ever explained the bull case to Carpet Right to me. I've always thought it was a slam dunk short. So thank you for enlightening me on that. I think it's a very interesting perspective. I mean, which we could maybe touch on a bit, because personally, I always like to hear the bull and the bear case for stock. In fact, in many ways, I like to hear the bear case first before I would even consider buying a stock. And yet, I know you and I both post a lot on bulletin boards, and you've come in for a huge amount of abuse from people, as indeed have I. I probably deserve it because I provoke people sometimes. But you seem to remain very calm and measured against an onslaught of criticism from people who are bullish on a stock you're bearish on. I mean, what's your view on that?
I don't know. You know, sort of, I don't know it's life, I suppose. There's some people, maybe, I don't know whether they're envious or what the reason is for it, but I come from a council estate, and I sort of think that it's nice to help people out. You know, obviously when we talk about stocks, well, it's not pure altruism. We like to talk about stocks and get people interested in stocks that we own. It gets the word around, and it helps generate interest, and the stock probably rises if more people know about an undervaluation there. So.
Exactly.
But I think it's quite nice to see the small guy, you know, the guys around you making a bit of money, and it's not the city making the money as well. So it's quite nice that with people that don't understand that or they don't come from that angle. But I love seeing other guys like me making money in a stock that I'm making money in. So
yeah, I agree. And I mean, you've got a big following on your board on ADVFN. So obviously, you know, you don't get a big following unless you get more right than wrong.
Right. Well, hopefully, yeah. But I do get them wrong. Believe me, you know, I'm not perfect. Everybody gets one wrong, but I think what you've got to try and do is obviously get a lot more right than you do wrong. And if you do that, you're beating the market.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, my personal target is to try and get sort of three quarters right and a quarter wrong, but in practice it doesn't, you know, I don't usually get anywhere near that, but even if you get 60-40, providing your mistakes are relatively small, you can make a great return, can't you?
Yeah, and if you spot your mistakes early as well, you know, if you know you've made a mistake and you can kill that off early, then that's balancing up your odds as well if you get out of a bad one. When you realise you've done it, instead of hanging on there, a lot of investors want to hang on. If they're down on the stock and they're losing money, they want to hang on until they can sell when they've made a profit. And I always think, if you've made a bad decision, sell it and make the money up elsewhere and find a good decision to, you know, get your money back on. And
It depends, though, isn't it? Like you said before, though, good companies do recover from profit warnings. And, I mean, the trouble I'm finding at the moment is that any company that's performing well will be too expensive for me to want to buy. So, in a way, the profit warnings are giving me the opportunities to buy into decent companies at a favourable price. But you've just got to watch the ones that are not tread on the landmines, if you like, of the companies where things are getting a lot worse, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I mean, that probably takes us into FlyB, which is a stock that I think both of us have held recently, which has gone quite badly wrong. I mean, they've halved in the last few weeks on a statement that I didn't think was that bad, but it contains certainly some negatives. What are your thoughts on that one, Richard?
I'll hold my hand up there. You know, sort of that's one I think I've got wrong. And all the factors I look for. It got a new board, the former EasyJet. The guy there, I watched his presentation, Saad Hamid, and he looked very convincing. They got rid of the CFO, and they got a new CFO in, and it all looks as if they've got everything running great, but they've got these jets that they've got sat there on leases, and it makes you wonder what sort of drugs the previous ball were on that made them go and buy all these jets on such a leasing deal that they were never going to use.
And they've got nine particular types of jet planes that they don't want to use, do they, which are just lying idle and costing something like £26 million a year in lease and maintenance charges, I think, aren't they, something like that?
Yeah, and so until they do a deal and get rid of those, that's just a big, big drain on the cash. They raised all that cash in the share issue that they did, and that looked like they've got plenty of cash to keep going. When you see they're going to double $25 million away a year, and they don't look any nearer getting rid of these jets, it sort of makes you think, well, have they really got their plan together right, and are they the real deal? So,
But looking at your sort of contrarian stance on carpet, right, for example, is there not a contrarian trade now on FlyB to say, well, the catalyst for a recovery could well be an announcement that comes out saying we've disposed of four or five of the nine planes or whatever?
I reckon it will. I reckon that, you know, if they get rid of those planes or a chunk of them, that will be a big bounce in the stock price.
Yeah, but I agree.
I think the chart will probably tell me it's going to happen before it actually happens.
interesting. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm watching Flybe. I sold a bit out when they made their first set of results that had the bad trading statement with it, and then the last trading statement I got rid of the rest of my shares.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a nightmare, that one. So
it has, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting tight in this at the moment. I bought some more personally, around about 60p, just mainly because I think there could be a nice catalyst to get it up to 80-90p on the disposal, hopefully, of the 9 surplus planes, you know. But,
yeah, the chart looks like it's sort of like may have just started to make a base, and I'd like to see that sort of go along and bobble along for a month or two, and maybe see some high volume and the chart ticking up, and then that might be a point where I might decide to stick my nose in the grinder again and have some more skin taken off.
Excellent. Now, that's very interesting, Richard. Thanks for that one. Okay, a couple more stocks that you like currently. So we've done Howdens and Carpet, right?
Greggs.
Controversial one. Oh, Greggs.
Greggs is a cracker, I think, is, you know, sort of looking at that now, people say, oh, the PE, you know, sort of is up around 15 or 16 or something like that. But they are absolutely, you know, people say, it's another one, isn't it? It's another carpet, right? A lot of people love or hate Greggs. Some people say, oh, fattening, greasy food, yeah, cafe, yeah, don't like Greggs.
Not that bad, though, do they? They do sandwiches and, relatively.
What's wrong with fattening, greasy food, I say? You know, I like the especially rolls and pasties, bring them on. But they're going more towards a manga type style store, and they've done lots of fresh food. They've knocked a lot of the in-house bakeries on the head, and they've moved a lot of their stores from bad locations into newer locations and worked on the leases and stuff like that. And now the profits are absolutely soaring. I think they're probably doubling their profits this year, their earnings this year, and the sales are up 9% in the last over Christmas, and the margins are growing, and it just looks like a store. Well, the chart says it all, really. I think I bought in August, September time, around about a £5.50 level.
So you've done very well on that, because that's up to £8.35 now, isn't it?
Yeah,
that move since when, round about the time you bought.
Yeah, and they've got their results in March, and I think they've got a tenner written all over them in the sort of short to medium term, probably. I know, longer term, they're probably going to do a lot better than that, because they're just, the guy there is from former Punch Taverns. They got rid of the old boss. They had a TV series on Sky, Greggs, all about Greggs and the old boss there, and it was a fly on the wall TV series.
Yeah.
Watching that, I just thought to myself, the boss there looked like he was just, there to be a showman and not really there to get the company back into.
Oh, I see, it was the old boss, was it?
Yeah, yeah, and in the meantime, he's gone, and once he's gone, I thought, well, that's one to keep an eye on, and they talked the talk there, and the new boss from Punch Taverns, Roger Whiteside, he seems to know what he's doing, and they've moved into little places where they're now putting Greggs in motorcycle cafe filling stations, and they've got one on Isle of Wight Ferry and stuff like that, so locations where they get good footfall and people like it, and it's all fresh food now. A lot of it is freshly made sandwiches with under 400 calories, and you can sit in there and eat, or they've got bits outside the store where you can sit and eat, and they're making the most of their space, and it's a cracking spot, and the way that sort of got operational gear in there is really good. So
That looks quite interesting. I mean, I've noticed I'm just browsing the Stockopedia page while you're talking, and they've got a great little chart on there showing the broker consensus trend. And for Greg, that's over the last 12 months, the broker forecasts have just been steadily edging up almost every month, which is always a very good sign, isn't it? Well, nearly always, because it means that the broker forecasts are really lagging behind some sort of underlying improvement in the business. I mean, is that something that sounds like, from talking to you about the other shares, this seems to be a recurring theme with you. Is that something you actively look for?
Yeah, I look for brokers constantly tweaking their earning forecasts, and that's happened with Howdens, and it's starting to happen with Carpet right now. The brokers have tweaked them up a little bit, and Greggs, it's happening all the time. They're net cash as well now, and the thing with Greggs is they're pay a nice yield, and that yield's going to rise, you know, steeply with the earnings growth. So the yield's going to and Howdens is the same. Basically, the brokers were talking about them paying back half their market cap in cash.
Wow.
Half their market cap in cash returns to the shareholders between now and 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... because they're not doing the, once you've done all this bit where you've paid off these, got rid of these legacy leases and you've used the cash out getting rid of these awful leases that these companies have got, then you've got the cash left that you don't have no use for other than to give it back to shareholders. So, Howdens, Greggs, I can see, sort of Carpet White being one of those in a couple of years' time that might be doing the same, so.
Mm-hmm. This is really interesting. So, okay, let's talk about a couple slightly more controversial ones then. I know you've mentioned Wincanton, haulage and storage type of business, isn't it? Outsourcing.
Yeah,
kind of
logistic. They've got lorries that you see clattering about all over the country, delivering stuff for people like Howdens. They've won a contract for Howdens and stuff like that. It's not a stock that I'm really sort of a long-term holder of, but it's a stock that I'm riding the trend on the chart with, and I know you've mentioned the balance sheet, which is absolutely crummy, you know, sort of.
It's one of the worst I've ever seen. I mean, it's more or less insolvent, the way I look at it, but the market doesn't seem to care.
It's difficult, but sometimes these charts sort of tell you more than the actual balance sheet, so, because a bit like Thomas Cook, I bought Thomas Cook when they were down at about 20 pence. If any company looked like it was bust, it was Thomas Cook. You know,
I know, they were terrible.
I was swimming with, got loads of debt, and I didn't look like they had a chance. But the chart levelled off for about 4 or 5 months, and then it sort of like just seemed to firm up, and it just felt that there was something going on there. And
Just
they got the new Harriet Green, who came in and managed to charm the city, and they managed to get refinancing. And as soon as that happened, and people realised they weren't going bust, and suddenly they were a company that's worth far more money than people had expected. So, and again, with Kenton, I wouldn't say it was a company that looked like it, wouldn't expect it to be going bust, but it looked like a company, the chart just sort of is just curving up in such a way that it's steepening that it almost as if something's happening there in the background that investors don't get to see. So I've basically traded it on the chart. I wouldn't want to trade it on the balance sheet. It's got a low PE or reasonable PE. And the chart just says it's a stock to hold at the moment. So I've held it. And last week they came out and said they weren't benefiting from the falling fuel prices. You know,
Because it was a pass-through cost, wasn't it, they were saying?
Yeah. And so, I just wonder whether they're saying that and glossing over the fact that they are benefiting a small bit, but they want to make themselves look like they're the heroes rather than the oil price falling that's causing them to look so good.
Interesting way of looking at it, yeah.
When the oil price goes up, suddenly they are struggling because of the oil price, but when it goes down, we're not benefiting from the oil price. So sometimes what a director's not telling you, rather than what they are telling you, that sort of gives you a bit of a clue, I think. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, sort of interpreting the director speak, Kennelly sounds to be one of your key successful strategies. Is that a...
I like to read through the lines and listen to what they're saying, and always earnings will be weighted to the second half means... not always, but earnings will be weighted to the second half usually means we're going to have a profit warning, but we can't bring ourselves
exactly.
to go
that. Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
So there's all things like that. You know, there should be a little diary, really, of a little translator that tells you what director is actually saying when they say something. So
base this on the track record of particular directors and particular companies? Are you more prepared to believe things if the company has been conservative and met forecasts in the past and things like that?
Yeah, like Quindell, for instance. That's a
let's get on to Quindell. Come on. Quindell. Tell us about Quindell, Richard.
Do you really want to know? Have you got that?
Yeah, go
Have you got
it.
A whole back?
Well, give us the abbreviated version.
Well, the abbreviated version is, the guy there, Rob Terry, who's been at Innovation Group and done all this before, and the company has been such a... What he did at Innovation Group and the way the child has got shafted there, and then he starts up another company, does exactly the same thing, and and suddenly shareholders are in there piling in, going mad, thinking that suddenly he's going to be a different guy and the company's going to be different. And I sit there and think, well, you know, if your stepfather poisons your mother, you know, do you want your stepfather marrying your, you know, marrying somebody else and, you know, living there and sort of thinking that you're not going to see your new mum die again? It's like a...
But now Terry's gone, are you not amenable to the idea that, you know, that new management could have a clear house and sort it all out?
Well, I'm sure they probably can, but does the new management actually know what's gone on there? Because he's got, it's about 120, 130 subsidiaries of this company that he's got. And you just think to yourself, they're passing money from one company, goes to another company, you don't know what are actually... what actual real sales and what deferred sales, and it's such a big can of worms that I don't believe anybody can actually know what's going on at that business. And there may be some value in it somewhere down the line, but I'm sure there's going to be a big write-off and a rights issue before anybody can sort of like say that we've got this into a state where you can start growing the company from properly.
I agree. I mean, I think there probably is some value in there, but. You know, like you say, it's been a giant can of worms. And it's just, I mean, this talk of £1 billion or $1 billion disposal of the legal services business, I mean, to me, it just looks pie in the sky.
Never going to happen. No,
I agree. I mean, those types of legal services businesses are not valuable businesses. They're sold on quite low multiples of EBITDA, aren't they?
They're staff, aren't they? You know, a business like that is the staff. It isn't the business. And sort of like you buy a business like that and the staff are locked in for 2 years, then they go away and start their own competition against you. And so unless you can actually nail the staff to the floor and not let them leave, then you're never gonna have a business there that's good long term, I don't think. So it's not, and it's buy to build. I've never seen, well, I've rarely seen a buy to build work in all the time I've been sort of looking at shares. And if they actually buy to build with cash, when they buy to build with shares, they just keep diluting and diluting the company with more and more shares. Whereas if a company like Judges is probably one of the few buy to builds that I think is an actual genuine company that's done it properly.
Yes, that's David Cicero's vehicle, isn't it? A ticker JDG. Are you still in that one?
I bought them at about £1 and I sold out just close to a tenner because I had a good run in that.
Well done.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't want to, once you've got to a tenner, it's often it's out of 20 quid, you know. It's better to have that.
But they did, though, didn't they? They did briefly.
They did, yeah. It was sort of, you know, they've got a 20 quid sooner than I thought they would, but you can keep hanging on to, you know, if you hang on to 20 quid, you probably saw them go back down to 10, 12 or 12 quid, what they fell back to recently, or whatever it was, 12, 13.
So,
they've had a good run, but they actually generate the cash and then go and buy the company with cash rather than sit there and, you know, keep raising more and more shares and throwing more shares at it. So
it's a very good business model, isn't it? And David Cicero, I think, is a class act. I mean, he just doesn't seem to have put a foot wrong in terms of the acquisitions he made. In a similar vein, actually, although earlier stage, I think Traxys, John MacArthur at Traxys, has shown himself to be very adept at making good acquisitions.
Yeah.
And he's got his stock now up onto quite a high valuation. And that then gives you, mind you, I don't think he issues many shares at Traxys. I think he's doing them mainly from cash as well. So it can work, buy and build, can't it? But I think you're right, more often than not, it doesn't.
No, exactly. And, you know, when you're in AIM as well, it's sort of like you're struggling to find the ones that really are genuine. It's going to be a few genuine stocks in AIM, but I find now that if you've got, you know, out of 10 AIM stocks, 7 or 8 are going to go bad. So you've got such a diversity to make sure that you don't get hit. That buying more shares just means you're more likely to get hit. And
I agree that a really, really rigorous selection process is needed. I mean, I would exclude at least 2/3 of the stocks on AIM, if not more. You know, I wouldn't touch them pretty much at any price because I just think they're fundamentally not good companies. But there are some decent ones amongst the junk, aren't there?
Oh yeah, I think I'm sure there are. You know, I've got a couple of AIM. You know, there's a couple of AIM stocks that I've got at the moment. I'm holding Abcam, which is quite they've got a good history. They pay a dividend. I like UK-based AIM stocks that pay a dividend.
Yeah,
if they,
I agree.
If you find those, they're usually, you've got a company there that's looks fairly genuine, and you can have reasonable trust in them. They're behaving more like a fully listed company than
stocks. It's the ones French Connection you used to like, didn't you? I think you went off that one, didn't you?
Well, Mark's, they seem to have turned around, but I didn't stick to my own rules there, and really, Mark's has to go before I can see that company actually becoming a really good turnaround situation. Bad balls don't often become good balls, and he's sort of like, since that FCKU or whatever it was.
FCUK, yeah.
Once they did that, and that sort of, although at short term that made them a lot of money, it earned them a lot of bad publicity as well, and I think I'd like to see a different board in there to turn that around. If that happened, then I'd be more interested in going back in there. But, you know, they blow hot and cold so much that, you know, over the years we've been doing great. Oh, no, sorry, weather's affected us.
Yeah, there was quite a strong recovery in 2010, I think, wasn't there?
Yeah.
The profits absolutely went through the roof, but then came straight back down again. Perhaps they just hit a fashion sweet spot that didn't last. But,
yeah.
Although, funny you should mention, actually, I was looking on their website yesterday, and they're doing the slogan T-shirts again very prominently. There were loads of them with different slogans incorporating, you know, a different way of saying fuck, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's old hat, isn't it? But maybe a new generation of people are coming through who don't remember it last time, possibly.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know how long you can keep having sort of like a... like Supergroup as well, you know, I sort of see those.
Yes.
How long youngsters are going to want to wear stuff that their dads were wearing, you know, and sort of...
Dads still are wearing. That's right, yeah. Okay, we've probably done enough on stocks, so maybe just to close then, some final thoughts on the markets, the macroeconomic picture, anything you like. How do you see the outlook?
Well, I think it's quite exciting for this year, actually. I think the market is sort of underestimated. You know, I know there's a lot of IPEs, but where's the money going to go to? Bond yields are so low that if interest rates do rise, people say, oh, you know, stock market and builders will sell off and stuff like that. But where do you go? You're not going to go into bonds.
No.
Sort of thing, because you're going to get hammered if interest rates are going up and you're in bonds. So the equity market looks a better place. It's the least ugly of two girlfriends, I suppose. And it's... And I do think that sort of the fall in this petrol price is going to be one of the biggest boosts to the economy around the world that we could have had. It's like a big tax cut for...
Yeah.
I'm thinking people are probably saving about nearly £1 a gallon now compared to where petrol was
true.
A few months ago.
Yeah.
And,
so sort of consumer-related stocks, consumer discretionary, technical, so those are the sort of things you're looking at?
That's it, yeah. I think I like builders and builder suppliers. I like... construction companies, I think they're good, but in particular retailers, and I like stocks you can understand. I don't like these things that, you know, tech companies that make phases, Star Trek phases that I don't know what they're going to do. They're so technical, I can't understand what their market is and what they're...
I agree. And also these things change so fast, don't they?
Exactly.
A software company...
Yeah, and it's difficult. So I like things a bit like Warren Buffett. You can understand it. I understand that Greg's pasty. I fully understand that. I understand it really well. And stuff like carpets and, you know, when you're looking at and things. So, you know, when a company tells you something, you know, it's good. But the macro situation for those companies is really good because people...
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, they may not look cheap on a PE basis at the moment, but, you know, you're buying a say with Greg's, a 2.5% dividend yield that you know is going to go up.
Yeah.
Well, you try finding a bond that yields 2.5% and is inflation linked. You know,
exactly.
You can't get it.
No.
And you'll get capital growth on the share price as well, probably, if you can ride out the inevitable sort of lurches down from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, but pretty upbeat then for 2015.
Oh yeah, I think this could be probably one of the best years we've had. When everyone's sort of thinking, everyone keeps talking about interest rates going up. But I don't think when you've got inflation running at 0.5%, and there's people, you know, mortgages are not going to go up when that's the sort of interest rate. And I can't see. I probably think when the market suddenly starts thinking interest rates are not going to go up again for far too long, they'll suddenly catch everybody out and interest rates will rise suddenly and everyone will get caught out. But at the moment, people are sort of thinking, oh, interest rates have got to go up in the next sort of like few months or... I think that that'll be the surprise that they go out further than we expect, but when they do go up, suddenly we'll be chasing our tail and they'll be going up quicker than we expected. So for now, it's there may be trouble ahead, but while the moonlight and... face the music and dance.
Well, I think on that wonderfully welcome and wise move moment. No, who did that song originally? I can't remember.
Nat King Cole, was it? Nat King Cole was the original.
Okay. Well, on that wonderful note, I think we'll sign off. Thanks, Richard. That was really, really good. And could we have you back as a sort of regular from time to time?
Yeah, I'll be pleased to. Yeah, I'll be happy to chat. That's fine. Yeah, I enjoy
it. It's good, isn't it? Well, we'll catch up with you again in a few months' time and maybe revisit some of the shares we've discussed and see how they got on.
Yeah, well, then, like Morgan and Wise, bring me sunshine, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks, Richard.
Cheers, Paul.
Take
nice
care.
To speak to you. Bye-bye.
Likewise. Bye.